Welcome to Theory of Pets. I'm a passionate pet owner with a drive to help others like me uncover the truth about the pet industry and what goes on behind the scenes. Parasites are not usually something that anybody wants to talk about, but if you're a pet owner, you need to know about parasites. You need to educate yourself about the parasites in your area and how they can affect your dog or cat, what signs and symptoms you should be looking for, and how to get rid of these parasites. The best thing that you can do is to have a conversation regularly with your veterinarian. And there are also some great online tools that you can use to find out about the different parasites in your area and educate yourself on those. One of the best resources that we have in the United States is the Companion Animal Parasite Council. And today I spoke with Dr. Craig Pryor, and he is a board member for the CAPC and also past president of the CAPC. So he has some great information for us about parasites in our pets. Dr. Pryor, thank you so much for your time today, and welcome to Theory of Pets. Could you just start out by giving us a little bit of a background so our listeners can get to know you and how you became involved with the Companion Animal Parasite Council?
I'm a practicing veterinarian. I have been for 5 years. I'm based out of Nashville, Tennessee. I've had a large eight-doctor practice there and also been a partner in 3 emergency clinics. I became involved with the, I actually sit on a number of advisory boards, parasitified advisory boards with different drug companies. And as such, I actually then developed a relationship with the Companion Animal Parasite Council many years ago. And I got invited to join the Companion Animal Parasite Council as one of their board members. And I just rotated off, so I'm the immediate past president. So the Companion Animal Parasite Council is a national nonprofit. We are actually funded by industry, but we are totally independent from industry. And what we do is we exist to provide a couple of different things. One is we provide guidelines to veterinarians. So first I should give you the makeup. So the makeup of the board, we're made up of practicing veterinarians like myself, public health veterinarians, and also parasitologists, and then we have some other positions that are open, that are open. We have a statistician on there from Clemson, professor at Clemson University, a veterinary technician, representative of Veterinary Technicians Association, and a few other people like that. But we have no industry people on our board, so we're totally independent from industry. We provide the guidelines to veterinarians about all the common parasites, the dogs and cats, and the less common parasite, the dogs and cats. So we provide all the information that veterinarians need as they become involved with different parasites when they're practicing. We also provide all the information to the consumer side, to the consumers, to the pet owners as well. So we have 2 websites. One is CAPCVET, CAPCVET.org, and that is for primarily veterinarians and industry people. And then we have the consumer site, which is petandparasites.org. That's the consumer site for the pet owners. So we're sort of like we're the knowledge base on parasites that dogs and cats, if you put it that way. So that's what we exist for, and we're changing. So it's not like you can say, my dog's got this, and this is what I need to do. Parasites are dynamic and ever changing, so we need to stay up with them and know what's going on with them so we know how to best protect our pets. So our ultimate goal is to see every pet protected, and as an extension of that, that the family is protected as well.
Absolutely. And for any of our listeners that are interested in those websites, probably the petsandparasites.org, but I'm also going to link to the CAPCVET.org for anybody that wants to check those out. And like you mentioned, they're really kind of important sites to bookmark and look on every year because things are always changing with parasites.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why I think it's important for pet owners to should have a conversation with their veterinarian about parasite prevention every year. In fact, I like to see my patients every 6 months. And that's called a wellness exam. And those wellness exams that I always try to engage my pet owners and have a conversation about parasites, because I want to know what's going on in their lives, in their pet lives, because we do so many things now, and we take our pets with us. So, you know, we need to do risk assessment. So I need to, you know, one is I want to know how many pets they have and what pets they have in their household now. I like to know how many children they have. I like to know lifestyle. You know, do we want to do a lot of hiking? Do we do a lot of traveling? Because, you know, it's reaching a point where about 39% of all pet owners travel with their pets now. Well, if you live in an area with low incidence of this type of parasite, that you travel, you might go to an area where there's a high incidence of that same type of parasite. So I need to be able to make sure that we protect your pet before you get there, after they've got an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like you mentioned, I mean, our lifestyles, things like that, they change. So, you know, 1 year, maybe you're not doing a lot of traveling with your pet, or, you know, you're not outside a lot. But the next year, maybe, you know, you have a fitness goal and you're doing some more walking and hiking and you're outdoors, or you're traveling more with your dog. So it's important to stay on top of that and really keep your vet informed if things change in your lifestyle and your dog's lifestyle. So what are some of the most common diseases that companion animals can contract from parasites?
So there's two aspects of this. There's the parasites themselves and the problems they can cause. They'll deal with that first. And the most common parasitic diseases, we see common parasites in dogs and cats. One is the intestinal parasites. So you have bookworms, roundworms, whipworms, and giardia. So they're all different. So hookworms are very, very small. You can only really see them with a microscope. But they live in the small intestine. They suck blood. We see them really really bad in young puppies and kittens when they get a lot of these. They can get anemic from them. So we see that as one aspect. Roundworms are an intestinal parasite of dogs and cats as well. We see it mainly in young puppies and kittens again, and they create again anemia. And you know, you get the typical little puppy or kitten with a really fat belly. It really can make them sick. Whipworms can really affect any age animal, and any of these parasites can. But whipworms tend to be one that you see often in adult animals as well. Whipworms live in the large intestine. They suck blood as well, and that can be a really hard one to completely get rid of and keep them free of. And lastly, we see giardia. Giardia is a protozoal parasite infects the intestines of dogs and cats. Typically, they get that from standing water. We often see it as a parasite of dog parks or daycares. And, you know, what people need to understand, a couple of things. One is, some of these parasites are really hard to get rid of in the environment, like whipworms. Whipworms are very hardy, and whipworms can live for a long time in the environment, and so can create a long-standing reinfection potential. You know, hookworms, the eggs can live in the soil for a long period of time as well. And these parasites can have hookworms can have a very short, what we call pre-patent period. That's from infestation to reproduction to eggs in the environment again, so they can get reinfested very easily in lieu of 10 to 14 days. But also, you go to a dog park, you know, dogs are running around playing, and they might drink out of a puddle of water in the dog park. There could be giardia cysts in there that they could pick up. They play with a dirty tennis ball at the dog park. There could be worm eggs on that tennis ball, and so that dog could get infected that way. Moving on to other common parasites, so we deal with the external parasites. So external parasites, we see the most common one being fleas. And fleas can create disease in themselves, especially in young animals when they get, some of them will get 400 or 600 fleas on them, and big fleas bust blood. If you've got a 10-pound puppy that's got 400 fleas on it, they're going to get anemic very fast, and think about a kitten as well. But fleas can actually pass on various diseases of dogs and cats, now being one of them, and a few bacterial infections. So they can transmit disease. And then we have ticks. And ticks are really innocuous for once because they're so big and they've just got that really yuck factor going with them. But it's not so much the ticks themselves, but the ticks are called vectors. Ticks transmit diseases. So that's the diseases that ticks can transmit. The common ones in the northeast and the northwest of the country, Lyme common one in the northeast and northwest of the country. Ehrlichia, which is we see throughout more of the southern states, but it's spreading. That is Lyme. And then we also have Lyme disease is another. So it's top Lyme, it's top Anaphylaxis, Ehrlichia, and then we have Rocky Mountain spotted fever as well. So they're sort of the four major ones that people know about. There are a few minor ones as well that they can transmit as well. But these can all be very, very serious infections of dogs and potentially cats as well. Ticks also transmit to cats a disease called phytoxozoonosis. So there's just not lots of nasty stuff. And then lastly, the bloodborne, one of the bloodborne ones is heartworms, and that's one of the biggest ones that we're aware of and people should be aware of. But heartworms are actually spread by the mosquito. So a mosquito bites an infected dog, and then the mosquito picks up the microfilaria in the bloodstream. That's the baby heartworm. The microfilaria goes through a couple of different changes in the mosquito, and the mosquito, they're flying, you know, there's 70% of mosquitoes, three species of mosquitoes in the U.S. that can spread this. The mosquitoes then can fly anywhere from 150 yards to up to about a mile and a half, and will bite an uninfected dog or cat, and the baby heartworms get infected beneath the skin when the mosquito feeds, and after about 4 to 6 months, they grow up and migrate to the heart and lungs, and these worms are 12 to 14 inches long, and they kill many dogs and cats. So I hope I've grossed you out enough, but that's all the major diseases with all these animals.
Parasites definitely, you know, like you said, I think the ticks are the big one that people, you know, think yuck, and worms probably, but, you know, they're all, as you mentioned, extremely dangerous for pets. It's so important that pet owners are educated about the parasites that are more common in their area and having those conversations with their vet. And let's say that your dog or cat has contracted some sort of parasite, whether it's fleas, ticks, worms. What are some of the symptoms that they could be looking for?
So fleas, commonly itching or scratching, some of the most common signs you'll see with fleas. It takes a lot of times that dogs and cats will have ticks and you just don't notice them because the dogs don't really, and cats don't really do anything about them. They're just there. But, you know, if you get enough of them, they can give you bloody diarrhea, often loose stools, loss of appetite, all very common signs with that in very bad cases. A lot of times, intestinal parasites, they'll have them and they just won't show any clinical signs initially. Heartworms, you know, dogs can have shortness of breath, coughing, exercise intolerance, anemias. Heartworms can actually cause organ dysfunction as well. You can pick up the kidneys and livers because of heartworms as well. And cats can just cause sudden death. So you can have a cat that otherwise looks normal, healthy, and then kills everybody dead. And that's one of the signs that causes heartworms.
Wow.
But then you have the other one. So Lyme disease in dogs, it causes, a lot of times it can be subclinical. So again, you don't really see signs of it initially. But then, you know, with Lyme disease, you see fever, shifting leg lameness, swollen joints, enlarged lymph nodes, lethargy, depression, anorexia. Anaphylaxis, Ehrlichia, Rocky Mountain, often you get fever, you get anemias, you get depression, you get anorexia, which is loss of appetite. And a lot of these, you just look at your pet and go, there's just not something right with them, but there's no, you kind of put a finger on really what's going on. And that's where, you know, when you take it to the vet, they need a full physical exam, they often need blood work, they can need special tests for these tick-borne diseases. But that's the most common things.
So it's obviously not easy sometimes, you know, unless the infestation is, if there's a lot of parasites, often you'll notice the parasites themselves, whether it's in the feces or the vomit, or you might see fleas on your dog. But it can be really hard to notice the symptoms before it gets out of control. So the best thing for sure is the different preventatives that are out there. Not everybody's educated on the different types of preventatives that are there. So can you talk a little bit about the options that are available?
Well, there's many options out there. So every dog, every cat in the U.S. should be on a heartworm prevention year-round. And that's important because heartworms are a year-round disease. They're spread by mosquitoes. And, you know, even in the colder months of the year, you know, most people have central heat in the house, and mosquitoes can still be active. In fact, if you go to New York in the middle of winter and there could be 2 foot of snow on the ground, with mosquitoes, it's all about microenvironments. And you can go between these high rises and you'll find that there's temperatures in the 50s with lots of standing water because of all the heat vents and everything like that. Actually, I talked to one veterinarian recently that lived on the 11th floor of an apartment building in New York City in Manhattan. And he said, middle of winter, you know, it'd be, you know, 28 degrees outside. He goes, you go inside in the corridors between the apartments, he said it'd be 55 degrees, 60 degrees, and there'd be mosquitoes everywhere. So mosquitoes live in microenvironments, and that's the key. It's not the macro environment out there, it's what the microenvironment is that provides the ability for pets to be infested, to contract heartworms even in winter. And so all dogs and cats should be on including indoor animals, because mosquitoes do get inside houses, should be on a heartworm prevention year-round. Now, most of these heartworm preventions now have intestinal parasite control as well. So, you know, a lot of times to me, it's like I'm looking at the most broad spectrum thing I can do. So I'm looking for a heartworm prevention that also prevents intestinal parasites, and we can do hookworms, roundworms, and whipworms. And now I can do tapeworms as well. And they get tapeworms from fleas, and that's a great thing to do. So broad spectrum heartworm, and then we want to use a flea tick prevention year round as well. And there's many different flea tick preventions. You can do topical, you can do collars, and you can do orals. And the big thing about these products is it's really just, to me, it's working out what the owner can or will do. So a lot of these products are monthly, and you know, if I got a client that cannot remember to do a heartworm bill every month, then there is a 6-month injectable. Now, it doesn't do as many intestinal parasites, but it takes the forget factor out of the equation. So I like to do a monthly heartworm that supports that full spectrum parasite control, but then we want to work out what monthly to detect. So if I got a client that's forgetting to forget to do monthly, then there's one of the orals that lasts 3 months, and there's collars that can last 6 months. So it's really just, you know, that's why it's a complicated conversation with the client, so I could work out what their risk factors are and then what they can do to best protect the pet. And, you know, some people don't want to give an oral product, an oral flea tick to a client, so we've got a topical instead. And the client may not want to use topical, so I've got an oral instead, or I've got a collar. So we've got to mix and match according to what is best going to work for that individual and that pet. Now, the big thing is, though, I want to remind everybody that we should be doing year-round 12 months of the year protection. And I get asked this all the time, why should I protect my pet 12 months of the year? Because you know what? Right now, it's 25 degrees outside. Some areas of the country is down to 0 degrees outside. There's 3 feet of snow on the ground. I don't think that's going to be a problem. It's about understanding the life cycle. So let's talk flea life cycle for just a minute. An adult flea, when it hatches out, looks for a blood meal. That adult flea is attracted to your pet because they got a high blood temperature than us, so they can preferably get on a dog or a cat. And when that adult flea gets on a pet and has a blood meal, at that point, it becomes an obligate ectoparasite. In other words, it is not going to move to any other pets. Fleas don't jump from pet to pet to pet. Fleas get their free meal and they stay there. That flea then has a blood meal, and the female then starts laying eggs. And she lays up to about 50 eggs in her lifetime. These eggs are like little ping pong balls. And so when they dry, they fall off the pet. Now think about this. When your dog gets up from sleeping, what is typically the first thing they do? They shake. And if your dog has fleas, when the dog shakes, ping pong balls which are the eggs, fall off in an environment where the pet sleeps. So if that dog is sleeping in your bed, you got flea eggs in your bed. If your dog's got flea or your cat's got flea. The eggs that hatch out in these little maggot-like larva, these little maggots that crawl around the environment and feed off the debris from the fleas. And then they eventually send a cocoon into the pupa stage. And then that pupa stage then hatches out to the adult. All that happens, 95% of the flea life cycle occurs in the environment, typically when the pet sleeps. So if the pet sleeps on the couch, or sleeps on the floor, or sleeps in the bed, that's where the life cycle happens. And if it's, you know, 0 degrees outside with 3 feet of snow, but you've got your house set at 7 degrees and your dog's got fleas, the fleas are living inside in the perfect environment for reproduction. And so that's why in the pupa stage of the flea can last 6 months of the pet. That's black fleas survive through the winter. Because that pupa stage is down in the cracks and crevices or in the nap of the carpet where you can't get to them to kill them, and they will hatch out for the new batch of flea. That's why we do flea control year-round. Now, why do we do tick control year-round? Well, you got to understand the tick life cycle, and a tick is not just a tick. There are 4 major ticks in the U.S. Okay, so we've got the lone star tick, the brown dog tick, the American dog tick, and the black-legged tick, or the deer tick. These ticks have three host life cycles. So an adult tick has a blood meal off a host, and the host can be any dog, any cat, any bird, any mammal, any amphibian. And it has a blood meal dropped off, and it lays eggs, anywhere from 2,000 to 6,000 eggs in the environment, some of them up to 18,000 eggs. These eggs hatch out into the pupa stage, which are like little, they look like feed ticks, they're like little pinheads. And they quest and look for a new host. So they eventually get on a different host. They then have a blood meal drop off, become the nymph stage. They look for a different host yet again. They get on a different host, have a blood meal drop off, and then become an adult. You repeat the life cycle. Well, that life cycle, the average chick can live up to over 4 years, of which over 3 years is spent in the environment, not on any animals. So you can't break the life cycle. But if it's cold outside, snow actually acts like an insulator, and the ticks will sit beneath the top layer of snow insulated. And when as soon as the temperature hits 43 degrees, they pop out and they start questing for a host. They start looking for a host. And so it's important to remember that ticks don't feed 365 days of the year. But there is a life stage of a tick feeding 12 months of the year. Ticks feed 12 months of the year. So there's always looking for feed. And so that's why it's important that we use tick prevention 12 months of the year.
And I'm sure one of the common things that you hear from pet parents is how expensive these preventatives can be to do all year round. Can you explain why pet parents should not rule out these preventatives just based on the price?
So the cost of treating these diseases, heartworm disease in dogs can cost upwards of $1,000 to treat. If your dog won't mind, at least you get a biohazard. These diseases are deadly. These diseases can be, over 40% of dogs that contract Lyme disease will get chronic kidney disease. It shortens their lives, and the cost of treating kidney disease can run into thousands of dollars. So the diseases that they prevent, it's so much more cost effective to prevent than it is to treat. And that's the bottom line. And the other thing is, from a public health perspective, if I've got a dog that's on a heartworm prevention that prevents intestinal parasites as well, why don't you break it down on a parasite basis? It's actually fairly cheap to treat rather than prevent. But I am preventing, like hookworms and roundworms, both of these are zoonotic. Now, zoonosis means that it's a disease that can be transmitted from an animal to humans. There's over 10,000 children every year that contract hookworms or roundworms. Typically, you backtrack, that's the pet in the family that's got them. So, by keeping your pet healthy, we're keeping those children healthy. Lyme disease occurs in humans. It's very, very common in humans up in the Northeast. In fact, we've got a paper that's being published from CAPC that shows that dogs are sentinel for the risk of human infection. So dogs aren't transmitting Lyme to humans because it's transmitted by ticks. But if we're keeping ticks off our dogs, we're keeping ticks out of our households, and we're decreasing the threat to humans. But, you know, if you go to our map, so we have our map on capcvet.org, you can actually go to the map section, you can look at your state and then your county, and you can see what your prevalence rate. So if you're up in, like, Pennsylvania, and in your county there's a 12% prevalence of Lyme disease in dogs, you're at a 12% risk of developing Lyme disease as well. And so it's about let's protect the pet, and in turn we protect the family. And so the cost, it sounds expensive until you don't use it, and then it's your dog that's sick from that disease. And that's an expensive situation. Preventives are actually very, very cost effective.
I couldn't agree more. That's what I always tell people when I discuss the cost as well. That's always the first question people ask me. And I always say, you know, it's going to be actually cheaper for you in the long run if you do the preventatives and don't have to worry about the treatment.
Right. And then if you want to know what your risks are, we've got a new pet website as well. It's called PetDiseaseAlert.com. And what you can actually do is when you go to that website, you can click on the maps, you can click on the disease, and you can see what the risk is historically for your county, and you can look at a forecast for 1 month ahead. So you can look at February's forecast for your county right now for heartworm, Ehrlichia, anaplasma, or Lyme, and it actually compares it to historical averages. So you see what's going on in your backyard right now.
Wow, that's fantastic. And I'll make sure for any of our listeners that would like to check that out, there'll be a link to that below the podcast too if anybody wants to look. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about companion animal parasites or your organization?
You know, just remember we are a nonprofit on Pet Disease Alert. If they wish to donate, if they find the information valuable, there is a donate button there that we'd love people to donate if they wish. If they feel it's valuable, but you know, just bookmark captivevet.org, petfromparasites.org, and petdisealerts.com to sit in, so that way you can keep track of what your risks are in your backyard for your pet. But remember, protect your pet, protect your family.
Wonderful. Again, thank you so much, Dr. Pryor, for coming on and talking. Parasites to me are one of the most important aspects of pet care that pet parents aren't educated about. So I can't stress enough, again, below this podcast are links to capcvet.org, petdisealerts.org, as well as petparasites.org. So you can find that information, look in your area, educate yourself about what's out there in your area, what you should be protecting your pet about. And of course, as both of us mentioned and stressed, be sure to talk with your veterinarian about parasites and your pet and how you can help to protect your pet from parasites. So if you guys enjoyed this interview, I would love it if you would jump on our website, theoryofpets.com, and leave a quick review. That really helps when I'm reaching out to experts like Dr. Pryor. I can show them that you guys are out there listening and you want more information. So if you wouldn't mind doing that, that would be great. Again, those links to CAPC Vet and Pet Disease Alert are below here if you want some more information. I will be back with another hot topic next week. Thanks for listening.